Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places. Welcome to Forward Thinking.
Hey there, everyone, and welcome to Forward Thinking, the podcast that looks at the future and says, it feels just like I'm walking on broken glass. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
I'm Lauren Vogelbaum.
And I'm Joe McCormick.
And today we're going to talk about the three R's, but mainly recycling. That's, of course, reducing, reusing, and recycling. We were talking about the future of trash, and is recycling part of that future, and where does it play its part, and how important is it, and does it make sense? Some of the answers are, you know, they might surprise you. It's not even across the board, and also it's something that's constantly changing due to our improvements in the technology and processes.
Yeah. Let me guess. It's for hippies. You shouldn't do it.
According to Penn and Teller.
Right. Yeah. What you should do is go out, consume.
Oh, that doesn't surprise me.
they had a show. I'm not sure if I can actually say the title of the show
We'll bleep it out.
Bullshit was the name. Yeah. Was the name of the show. And they had an episode on recycling in which Penn in particular came down very harshly on it.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
on most of it.
There are certain arguments you can make against recycling certain products.
Certainly.
But I think a lot of that, again, will change over time due to improvements in tech and processes. But to really, first of all, I mean, let's talk about what recycling is. Obviously, it's for those who just have never heard the term, welcome to Earth. Recycling is, of course, taking material that you normally would just throw away and breaking it down to be reused in some form further down the line, whether it's to create more of the same product as what you were currently using or something entirely different.
I think part of the key of understanding recycling is the idea that there's some reprocessing involved.
Right.
That it's not just reusing, say.
Right.
Right. It's not taking a jar that you've used and putting something different in it, hopefully after you've washed it. That would be reusing.
By the way, if anyone comes over to my house for any sort of party or whatever, you're going to be drinking out of mason jars. I'm not a hipster. It's not that I think that that's a cool thing.
Just Southern and that's what you have?
I buy a lot of pickled vegetables, and then I think I want to keep using these jars, and so that's my glassware for the most part. I mean, it is.
You gotta collect your urine for the apocalypse somehow.
That's right. Well, I'll start on my urine later. I'm collecting other people's right now, and it turns out that it's a lot harder to convince people than I first expected.
For like biometric falsification.
Yeah, you know.
Okay.
Or just throw in at aliens. Just in case that happens to be their weakness.
So recycling has been used actually for hundreds and hundreds of years. Going back to when people were making metal tools, realized, I don't really like this one. Let's melt it down and make it again. Technically is recycling.
Gotcha.
That tool or sword or et cetera.
Right, right. So if you've folded it 1,000 times and made your katana for your end of days, duel against the Kurgan,
Or if you just were, I guess if you were to beat your swords into plowshares, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, recycling.
Excellent.
Exactly.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So, but really that's not, you know, that's one form of recycling, but it's not really what we think of when we're talking recycling, right?
It's not the industry level thing that we've got going on today.
Yeah. Obviously there was a big push to recycling back in the 30s and 40s.
Right. Well, even before that, around the turn of the century is when a bunch of industries started getting together and, processing scraps. World War One was when this became much more important because materials became so scarce due to the global war efforts that some companies began rendering garbage to recover grease and make tankage out of the rest of it. Tankage being non-fat related proteins, usually from animal parts that can be used for fertilizer.
Gotcha.
Through the 1930s, during the Great Depression here in America, certainly, and hard economic times in many other places, conservation recycling became so important a lot of people made most of their income by collecting items and selling them for scrap.
Wow.
And then you get to World War II, and there's more recycling efforts for the war effort again.
Mm-hmm.
You had fewer people to work on things because you had so much of the workforce sent off to war. that, you know, you didn't have as many people to actually get the raw materials you usually would need mm-hmm. to produce. And in wartime, production is a big part of it, right? I mean, everything from the stuff you would think of, like vehicles and weapons and mm-hmm. ammunition, that sort of stuff, to things that you might not necessarily imagine, just to keep everyone who's still, you know, away from the fighting, supplied with the stuff that they need.
Or how many boots did you need to make in World War II? You
know? Lots, mm-hmm. yeah.
Oh, rubber and nylon, items that were made, that were used at the time to make lots of common clothing items, wound up being used in, nylon was used for parachutes for the mm-hmm. war effort, mm-hmm. And of course rubber for tires. And
yeah, actually the fact that they switched from, like DuPont was making nylon stockings, they stopped making nylon stockings in order to make materials for the war effort, and apparently that caused a bunch of, they were called nylon riots. When DuPont went back to creating nylon stockings, there was apparently a run on stores because I didn't mean to make a run joke. Boy, that was a pun that was completely
accidental
unintentional.
Puns.
Yeah,
that's,
those are the best.
We're making those now.
Anyway,
that's great.
So yeah, that was that again, and that was sort of changing gears for production, but it also meant that repurposing this material for something else.
Repurposing and recycling was so big during the wars. It was more far-reaching than most people today really realize. For example, during the Victorian era, fancy cemeteries, every cemetery plot would have these gorgeous wrought iron fencings around them. And during the two world wars, you won't find those today basically anywhere because all of them were melted down during the wars.
Wow.
And so, you know, it's people would picnic there. It was very nice, you know. Garden, you know, picnics and cemeteries.
Desecration of the dead.
It's what you do. Yeah, sure.
But, we do it here in Atlanta, too. Oakland Cemetery does it all the time.
That's a cool
Desecrate
cemetery.
The dead?
It is a cool cemetery.
Yeah. That is where I learned about this, by the way. Visit Oakland.
Yeah, there you go. So you get up to like the 1970s. That's really when we got into the environmentalism movement. So recycling up until the 1970s was more about conserving resources for use for particular efforts, like the war effort.
When mm-hmm. you say resources, you mean the raw materials themselves, like
right.
the thing that's being reprocessed.
Right. It was recycling because in order for us to meet our needs, we
cheaply
had
enough
to
do them. Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't a save the environment kind of thing. It was, we need more X. The best way to do it is to pull up a bunch of Y, melt it down, and turn them into X.
Right. And in fact, immediately after the war, especially here in the States, we went through that economic boom where people were very conspicuously consuming.
Yeah.
And it became
Some could argue we're still there.
Sure.
Some of us are more conspicuous than others.
Especially at the time.
Buying the $1,500 pair of glasses.
Buying new stuff. Yeah, Jonathan just got his Google Glass. It's very exciting.
Yeah.
Or our Google Glass.
Yes, it's
really.
Ours. It's all of ours. You can share. Come on over.
But yeah. It wasn't until the first Earth Day in 1970. And in 1973 was when the first curbside recycling program got mm-hmm. off the ground here mm-hmm. in the States. And then through the 1990s, I think, is when it started really picking up, you know, due to Captain Planet and
sure.
Fern Gully,
yeah,
probably.
Right, Fern Gully. Tim Curry played the bad guy in that.
He did.
All you right. know, I laugh, but Captain Planet made an impression on me.
Did he?
I think so.
A positive one?
I think so.
Okay. Were you a Planeteer?
I guess. You know, I never got a ring, but.
Mm-hmm. See, for me, it's always, I just go back to the image of the Native American with the one tear going down the cheek to avoid littering. That's where my environmentalism comes from.
Isn't it funny? All these issues kind of get blurred together, like waste management, littering, landfills, recycling.
Sure.
But it'll be worth us talking about exactly what the real benefits of recycling are.
Well, first, I'm kind of curious, like, how does it happen? Like, how does recycling work?
Well, yeah, that's interesting. So let's start at your house, I guess.
Okay.
So you've got a bunch of recyclables, and they'll be, say, glass bottles and plastic containers,
sure.
Paper products like cardboard and newspaper. And cans, aluminum cans, steel cans, tin.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to get all this stuff recycled. Well, there's a big distinction you want to make right at the beginning, which is sorted versus unsorted.
Mm-hmm.
And different municipalities, I think, will deal with that in different ways. Like, some people will require sorted, and that makes sense because it's much easier to process
right
when the recycling arrives pre-sorted to the processing facility. But what I've read is that that also lowers participation rates.
Right, people, because you're putting the burden on the person.
Right.
And for some people, that's just too much trouble.
Yeah. I mean,
they don't want to go through the effort of sorting through the stuff that they want to recycle and put it into one of five different bins or whatever.
Mm-hmm. So,
and it also just makes it less convenient for the person. And the sad fact is the more inconvenient it is, the lower the participation is going to be.
Yeah. So these facilities get more materials overall if they allow mixed materials.
Yeah. But then that makes it more difficult to actually recycle the stuff, right?
Yeah,
because they have to sort it.
Interestingly, we're getting a lot better at that.
Mm-hmm.
So you take these mixed materials and you have, say, curbside pickup.
Sure.
So a transfer truck comes along a route and picks up all the materials and takes them to a place called a materials recovery facility.
Okay.
And from there, you essentially put all your materials on a conveyor belt. And from here, it's not the same at every facility,
mm-hmm.
But so I'm just going to give kind of a standard view of some things I've seen. One thing that's going to vary between all these facilities is the level of automation versus manual sorting.
Mm-hmm.
So more advanced facilities have fewer human workers working to take these things out and have better processes for sorting automatically. But so usually the first thing will happen is there's some kind of initial purge where obvious trash is removed because, you know, what do you know? People put pizza in their recycling and stuff that they can't uh-huh. take. So you try to remove that at the beginning. And then usually after that, one of the first things they want to do is remove glass, because glass is kind of a different animal than most of these other things we mm-hmm. recycle. And so glass will be moving along a conveyor belt, and if it's not removed manually, it can be removed automatically by, like, a raking mechanism that separates based on weight and shape. Or there can be gravity sorting, so that there's a conveyor belt moving sort of upward at an angle mm-hmm. with enough friction to carry up plastic and paper products.
Lighter items.
Right, but glass rolls down off of it.
Gotcha.
And so once the glass is separated, that's usually crushed up into a constituency of shards called cullet,
mm-hmm.
and that can be used for all kinds of different things.
Okay.
But most of the rest of the products, apart from glass, eventually what the goal is to bale them like hay.
Gotcha.
And so after glass is removed, they'll usually sort out paper products, and they can do that by mechanical action or by hand. And you separate those out and take them to a fiber baler and bale them up together. Steel cans are often separated by magnets these days. And
sure.
That's interesting. So the conveyor belt will just pass under a very powerful magnet, just sucks them straight up.
Right.
But then you've got a problem that you've got all these aluminum cans and
right.
these other alloys that aren't – they're non-ferrous material, so they're not attracted to magnets. So
right.
One of the popular ways of dealing with that these days is you have something called an eddy current separator.
Okay.
And that's this powerful magnetic rotor that generates a field that blasts non-ferrous metals off in some direction.
Hmm.
It creates a separate magnetic field within the can itself,
mm-hmm.
and that magnetic field will be at odds with the field being generated by the device,
I
and
see.
It will just pop it right off the belt.
Interesting.
Yeah. So you've got say you've separated everything else by now, and you've got non-ferrous metals and you've got plastic, and they're rolling along. The plastic will just sit there, but when the aluminum cans pass over this thing, they shoot, you know, mm-hmm. fly away. I guess into a big basket or whatever you use. I don't know.
Sure, sure.
Uh-huh. Take them to the baler, smash them down into a cube. Those will be ready. And then finally, usually you're going to have plastic, and that's mm-hmm. sorted according to type. So you've probably seen like number one plastic, number two plastic.
Sure. Like type two plastics, like milk jugs and mm-hmm. laundry detergent jugs, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And those things are separated into different groups for ease of reprocessing.
Right.
And that can be done by hand or automatically by things like their sort of optical field separators. So they shoot out some beam of light that penetrates different plastics in different ways.
Gotcha.
And use a sensor to figure out what bits
exactly
which ones are which.
Yeah, as it passes over like a gap in the conveyor or something like that, it will use air jets to shoot out the ones that it wants to.
Yeah. So then at the end, and so you got your plastic left over and smash that into bales. And then at the end, your final product is you've got glass cullet, bales of plastic, bales of paper products, bales of aluminum, bales of steel.
Mm-hmm.
And all of these things are then sold to manufacturers or I guess really whoever wants them. I mean, you can buy recycled materials.
Sure.
You can just go pay for a bale of steel.
Right. Yeah, and in fact, let's talk about some of the stuff that can be made from recycled materials. Now, there's some stuff that, you know, is you've probably heard of, things like, you know, made tires made out of recycled materials, even pavement made from recycled materials. Typically, a lot of this stuff ends up making more of whatever it was before. So, for example, a lot of paper, recycled paper, ends up going into things like paper plates, napkins, paper towels, that sort of stuff. So a lot of that reclaimed paper just becomes more paper products. Same thing with aluminum. A lot of, like, you know, the odds of an aluminum can becoming something like a car frame are low. It can happen. There are manufacturers out there that will use recycled aluminum as part of their materials for designing this stuff. But it's far more likely that the aluminum can you toss in the recycling is going to become a new aluminum can. Glass is tricky, because glass comes in a lot of different kinds as well. Like you can have glass that's in colors or you can have clear glass. That can change things up. Often glass will get downcycled. Now downcycle means that you convert this into material that is slightly less valuable than what the raw material was or what the original product was. So, for example, a glass jar, you might throw that out in recycling or whatever, and it gets recycled as part of something that's made out of fiberglass. And by weight, it's less valuable. That's why we call it downcycling, because it's moved down a level. So that will that's fairly common for glass to go into things like fiberglass. But then there's some kind of cool stuff. I'm going to mention some specific companies, too, just for some sort of nifty products that are made out of recycled materials. For example, there's a group called Keen's Harvest Bags. They make, like, messenger bags, okay? But they make them out of recycled airbags from cars.
Oh.
They're actually really cool. You know, they just kind of a nifty way of reusing this material that otherwise might not ever be used. There's vinyl. What's that?
I just imagined getting a messenger bag that had, like, blood or a tooth on it or something.
I'm pretty sure that wouldn't happen. I think that might be bad press for the company. I apologize to Keen's Harvest Bags.
Oh, no, I'm not implying that I think that would happen.
No, I know. It's just the first thing that pops.
I have such a charming imagination. I have to.
No, I'm right there with you. Mm-hmm. There's Vinylux. Vinylux uses something that is beloved to me, old vinyl records.
Hmm.
So some old vinyl records are beyond the they've passed their prime, right? Mm-hmm. There might be scratches, there might be some sort of warping, and anyway, it makes the music less than, or whatever was recorded on them, less than interesting or pleasurable to listen to. And so what Vinylux does is it takes old vinyl records that are, you know, kind of messed up, and then creates things like bowls or clocks, ornaments and other stuff. And, anything that they don't use, like any scraps that are left over from their, projects gets sent to a plant in Nashville, actually. And all of that, those scraps are melted down to create new vinyl records, to have to be the material for new vinyl records. So nothing gets wasted. There is another company called Looped Works, and they have, used recycled neoprene, nylon, vinyl, polyester, leather to create all sorts of different products like electronics covers, like a cover case for, you know, a tablet or something. Some really cool designs coming out of them. And then there's a company called Moving Comfort. I like this one a lot. They remove chemicals from coffee grounds and turn it into yarn and then weave cloth out of this stuff.
Okay.
What?
That's fibrous, sure.
No, so yeah, coffee grounds?
Yeah, it's actually the chemicals from coffee grounds. So they're making a synthetic yarn from various chemicals they extract from coffee grounds, and they turn that into yarn, and they use that to make clothing. So the company's called Moving Comfort. You can look them up. It's pretty cool stuff.
You're blowing my mind, Strickland.
It's pretty neat. Pretty neat. There's Recycle Bikes, which is out of here's a shocker. I know you guys are going to be amazed when you hear this. Portland, Oregon. Recycle Bikes, which make bikes out of recycled aluminum. Their seats are made out of renewable cork. Right now, they also are belt-driven bikes, not chain-driven, because they said that the belt-driven ones are easier to maintain. They say that their goal is one day to have a 100% recycled materials bike. Right now, it's not quite there, but that's their goal, is to just make bikes that are completely made out of recycled materials. Up in Vancouver, the city is experimenting on creating new types of pavement that is made up of wax, partially, from recycled plastic. So they're taking this plastic in, and they're processing it into this wax to go into new pavement production, which is kind of neat. So yeah, that's just some examples. I mean, obviously there are tons of different examples of ways to use recycled materials, and you know, new products you can make from recycled materials. So let's kind of talk a little bit about some statistics, like what is actually getting recycled and how much is being recycled. Now we're going to be citing some factors from a report done by the Environmental Protection Agency,
which is here in the United States.
Yeah, we should also mention, obviously, a lot of the stuff we're talking about is very U.S.-centric because that's where we are located. There are obviously lots of different recycling companies and facilities around the entire world, but we are focusing mainly on the U.S. because that's really where we can get the most recent information in a very easy way, since we happen to live here. It makes it pretty convenient. But the report we're looking at is citing statistics from 2011, which was the most recent information that we could find. And according to that report, 73% of all newspaper/mechanical papers were recovered, meaning recycled. 57% of yard trimmings were recovered. 34% of metals were recycled. So you see that this number is going down. Glass, there was even less, and plastic is a little weird too. But by recycling the metals, there was actually 7.5 million tons of metal recycled in 2011. According to the EPA, we eliminated 20 million tons of greenhouse gas emissions, which totals more than 20 metric tons of carbon dioxide. And again, according to them, they say that that's about equivalent to removing 4 million cars from the road for an entire year. So, I mean, this is showing that there can be a real impact to these programs. If you participate, you can actually really help to reducing greenhouse gases, because the amount of energy needed to go into recycling some of these materials, not all of them, but some of them, is so much less than what it would take for you to create a new product from raw virgin material, that you are saving quite a bit of energy, and as a result, emitting fewer carbon dioxide and greenhouse gas emissions. So you're doing lots of good work all along the way.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of like the basic lowdown on recycling. I mean, it's a big deal. It's very much down to individual participation as well as community participation. Clearly, if you live someplace that doesn't have a recycling program, it makes it much more difficult to be part of this.
Right. I think that report said that overall, in 2011, Americans generated about 250 million tons of trash and recycled about 34.7% of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Out of all of the trash that was generated, usually we refer to it as municipal solid waste, or MSW. And it's a very, it kind of excludes other types of trash, things like industrial waste or construction waste, or toxic waste. This
sewage.
Stuff, yeah, these are not included in municipal solid waste. This is the
right
kind of stuff that you would see ending up in a typical landfill.
Mm-hmm. And I think that especially in Europe, a lot of other places do a little bit better than that.
Yeah.
But again, like Jonathan said, it really depends on the resources here in the States and your specific community.
Of course, yeah. It matters vastly by region.
Sure.
Right, of course.
In the United States,
and what kind of plants, what kind of processing plants you have, and whether or not people find it. I mean, you know, fortunately or unfortunately, it's monetarily based a lot of the time.
Oh, yeah.
You know, how worth it is.
Right. If it's cheaper to throw something in a landfill than it is to recycle it, or if it's cheaper to build new products out of virgin material than it is to take old material and repurpose it to make this stuff, then from an economic standpoint, you can see why people, companies, organizations pick the landfill option, because it means that they save money in the long run. Now, a lot of us, especially for those of us who feel very environmentally conscious, kind of cringe at that, the idea that somehow money can dictate this, when, you know, you might say, but in the long run, it's much, much better for us to do this. Well, that's easy to say, but if you have to have money to create these systems so that everything works,
it's hard to excuse it.
Yeah. You can't just wave it away. I mean, you have to be willing to put forth that investment. And either that means, you know, starting up a private company and trying to make recycling work for you as a business. And we'll talk more about that in kind of a waste disposal podcast that we'll be doing a little bit later. Or, you know, you have to be a government that's willing to go to the citizens and say, you're telling us you want us to deal with this problem. We can do that, but it's going to require this much money. So that means we're going to have to either raise taxes or repurpose money meant for other projects or whatever. You know, that's the sad fact of it, is that economics are going to play a role.
And it really depends from item to item.
That's true. Yeah. And we'll talk about that. You know, I think that that's a good way of finishing this up. But before we do, I want to mention one other thing about recycling, one other type of recycling, which is e-waste, electronic waste. Things like computers, smartphones, tablets, game consoles, all this stuff that we use, these electronics that we use, you know, we're kind of encouraged to go through these things at a rate that is pretty
steep.
Steep, yeah. Like,
so are you saying we shouldn't just throw an old computer in the dumpster?
I'm getting there. I will say that. I will say that, but I was going to say at first that, you know, we here in the United States in particular, we live in a society where we are encouraged to update our electronics on a frantic basis. For instance, if you are an iPhone user, and I, you know, if you're an iPhone user, then essentially once a year, you're shown off the brand new version of the iPhone that is, you know,
clearly superior.
Yeah, the whole thing is designed to get you to buy iPhones, which makes sense. That's the business, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, but, you know, if, especially in the U.S., the way that the contract system works for our phones, often those contracts lock you in for 2 years. So you've got this level of consumer frustration where, like, I want the new iPhone, but I'm locked into this contract. I'll just pay to get out of it or whatever. It feels like you are obligated to upgrade
right.
on a regular basis. I don't mean to pick on Apple. If you're an Android user, that's more like every couple of months, because there's a new Android phone coming from various manufacturers every few months that is obviously better than the one you bought last week.
And there's that old joke about computers that by the time you get it home,
it's obsolete.
It's obsolete.
Yeah, exactly. Which really isn't that much of a joke. It's pretty true. So we've got, let's say that even if you are being as responsible as possible, where you are not buying the newest electronic device every time it comes out, eventually you're going to get to a point where you're going to need to get rid of some of your electronics. Either they stop working, or you've replaced them with something else, and you need to remove it from your life.
Created an entire wall of dead computers, just for example. Not that I know anyone.
I've got
that personally.
I've got a corner of the garage that is the monitor graveyard. Yeah, and I'm talking about monitors. I'm not talking about displays. I'm talking about those huge monitors. But yeah, so eventually you're going to need to get rid of some of these electronics, right? So what do you do? Well, Joe, like you were saying, you don't want to throw them in the trash. It turns out a lot of these electronics have some pretty nasty stuff in them, some toxic materials. I mean, things like lead, which is obviously toxic.
Heavy metals.
Yeah, not the music, but like mercury, which is toxic. Beryllium, cadmium, other things from the Table of Elements song. that Daniel Radcliffe can sing for some reason. Anyway, this is dangerous stuff. And if you threw it away, there's a chance, depending upon where you live, there's a chance that that could end up going to an incinerator. There aren't that many in the United States, but in other parts of the world, incinerators are a big business. And it would release this stuff, and you would have to deal with it then, because if it went out into the environment, it could cause some real health hazards. In fact, in China, that's a huge problem, because there are some major e-waste reclamation centers in China. And reclamation, by that I mean they're trying to get anything useful out of these electronic devices that they can, and then they burn everything else. Mm. And it tends to release lots of toxic materials that can go on to create severe health hazards and a really negative environmental impact in the surrounding area. So e-waste is one of those things that needs to be handled very carefully. There are actually quite a few programs out there that allow you to donate your device so that it can then be refurbished and sold again. So that means it extends the lifetime of that device and gives someone else who wants it that opportunity to own it. Now, in that case, one thing I'll stress to everybody is if it's any sort of device that contains personal information, you want to make certain that you wipe all that personal information off before you donate it. There are a lot of organizations out there that will do this, or at least they say that they do that, that's one of their standard
services,
operating procedures.
Yeah.
It's obviously an important part. Personally, I would never hand over anything unless I was relatively certain that I had wiped it clean. Just as an aside, I bought my Xbox 360 refurbished, and it had the gamertag information of the previous owner still on there, because he or she had never bothered to wipe that from the Xbox.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say that I would necessarily have done anything about that, like logged in as that person and done something nefarious, but if I had been someone else, maybe I would have. I'm not that kind of guy. So what I did was, the first thing I did was I wiped it clean so that I wouldn't have any of that access to that person's account at all.
Yeah, reformatting the drive is the really important thing to do there, because a lot of the, especially services, like if you have Netflix or something on your Xbox, will retain your information for a shocking period of time after you've contacted the company about your stolen Xbox to tell them to take down that bit from any previous machines.
Yeah, so just word of warning, do some research. If you're going to donate some of your, or if you want to recycle some of your electronics, do some research out there and make sure that whatever outlet you're going to use is a reputable one. That's always a good thing. There are more and more of those rising up because people are trying to be more responsible with this sort of approach, which is admirable. Just make sure that, the one that you're going to go with is in fact a responsible organization. So now let's get into this whole idea about, does recycling make sense? Does it make sense from an economic standpoint and an environmental standpoint? And the reason why we even have this question is because there are certain materials where you could possibly make an argument that it really doesn't make a whole lot of sense to recycle. That doesn't mean that we should be using it like crazy and throwing it out the window, but rather that there may be other alternatives to recycling that we should consider. So, for example, one thing that does make perfect sense to recycle is aluminum. It is an incredibly efficient form of recycling. There's very little processing that you need to make some aluminum reusable.
Recycling a can, I think, saves 95% of the energy it would have required to make a new one.
Right. It only takes 5% of that energy you would take. Like, if you were to take the virgin material and then turn that into an aluminum can, and then you were to recycle an old aluminum can into an aluminum can, the recycled can would take only 5% of the energy that you needed to make the brand new can. So clearly, there, recycling makes perfect sense. As long as you have a way of sorting the trash, the recyclables, in such a way that you can get at that aluminum, it makes perfect sense. That sorting might be what holds you up, depending upon what technology you're using. But if you're using pre-sorted recyclables, then it's a no-brainer. Plastic's a little tricky. It does only require 1/10 of the energy to recycle plastic than it would to produce plastic from new material raw material that you've just managed to get. But again, sorting is the big problem there. And sorting between plastics can be such a huge issue that some recycling facilities will end up sending much or even all of the plastics they've received to a landfill.
Mm-hmm.
So even though you are putting your stuff in a recycling bin and a recycling truck is picking it up, it doesn't necessarily mean that that is going to be recycled. Some of that, or maybe even all of it, might end up in a landfill depending upon where you are.
Now, don't hear this and say, well, I shouldn't recycle plastic anymore. I mean,
right,
your local
right.
facility may be doing well by it.
And especially with that technology that Joe was talking about, the optical sorting, I think that it's made that process a lot more efficient.
Yeah, exactly. It's not that you shouldn't bother recycling. It may be that your facility is lagging behind the others, but I hope that most of them are working toward improving those processes so that they can recapture more of the plastic. It makes sense financially, you know, economically, as well as environmentally. It's just for some facilities, they have to catch up a little more than others. And so it's important to continue to recycle even with plastic. But just know that we're, you know, the level of sophistication, technologically speaking, when we get to sorting is not so widespread as to be infallible by any means. Paper, about 60% of the energy you would need to make a new piece of paper from raw materials is what you would need to make a piece of paper from recycled materials. So a little over half the amount of energy you would normally need. So as you see, we're moving further away from that 5% that aluminum has.
Mm-hmm.
And now with paper, it's more like 60%. However, paper's a lot easier to sort. So it turns out that, you know, a lot of paper tends to get recycled. And if you recycle about, let's see, I think a ton of paper ends up being about 17 trees. So if you think about that, you know, you're actually saving forests from getting cut down because you're reducing the need for new paper.
And furthermore, I mean, you know, trees are a renewable resource, but those old growth forests, that really provide a better environmental, habitat are frequently torn down for pulpwood trees, which grow much more quickly and are much more useful for the creation of paper. But, you know, it's not really the ecological equivalent.
Right. And that kind of brings us up to glass, which is the problem child, really. So glass, you know, glass is not made from a precious material. It's essentially made from sand. Yeah. Take sand, apply heat, you eventually get glass. It's a little more complicated than that, but not by a whole lot.
It's basically quartz, right? Is that?
Well, it's silicon, you know, it's
a bunch of stuff, really.
We can scrub that. I don't know.
Okay.
I was just guessing.
Okay.
I don't know why I said that. Apologies.
It's talcum powder, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So recycling glass only saves about 30% of the energy that you would need to create a new piece of glass from raw material. So you're not saving that much more energy by recycling than you would be by producing something new. The raw material itself is not a precious material. It's not something that's incredibly valuable on its own. It's not like taking more sand is really affecting the environment in a terrible way. So there are a lot of reasons why recycling is... It makes less sense with glass. It's not that it's ineffective. It's not that you shouldn't do it. It's that it's just not, from an economic and environmental standpoint, as important. What I would suggest is instead of recycling, you reuse, mm-hmm. just like I do with my mason jars that you'll be drinking out of if you come visit me in my house, assuming I offer you something to drink. Who knows? I'm not the most hospitable guy. Besides,
make sure you eat bread and salt when you go there.
I was just about to say that. Once, if you have bread and salt, you know you're safe. If not, it's a nice day for a red wedding. All right. So, yeah. So recycling glass, maybe not as big a deal, comparatively speaking, but reusing is very important. If you are able to reuse, that's the best thing to do. If not, recycling is perfectly fine. It's not like it's bad. It's just not as efficient as some of the other materials.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, eventually I'm going to reach a point where I don't need more mason jars because I'm never going to have 450 people at my house. And while making forts of it is fun, it's also really dangerous with a Jack Russell in the house. So I will eventually be recycling mason jars as opposed to reusing them over and over again. But that's really, you know, the end story there. And again, recycling for all of these materials is just going to improve over time as it becomes more economically feasible. In our next podcast, we'll be talking about waste disposal in general, and we'll talk about the economics of that and how just throwing stuff away costs money. It's not like throwing something away is free. It's actually, there is an expense to it. And if recycling ends up being economically more advantageous than just throwing it into a landfill, you can bet that that will take off. And that means the technologies will improve that much more quickly. And the environment, the environmental factors will improve as well. It's, again, depending upon your point of view, it may be a little sad to say this is all kind of dictated ultimately by a price tag. But that's kind of the world we live in until we reach that Star Trek future where we don't need cash anymore. In which case, we'll be replicating everything we need anyway.
And using cold fusion to power all of our everything.
Yeah, And then we'll create some sort of, what was it? It was a cold fusion bomb in the first Star Trek, wasn't it? The reboot that was...
I do not remember.
I don't understand how that works. I'll get on that. I'll get on the communicator with Spock and we'll find out.
Yeah.
Anything else about recycling, guys?
That's what I got.
Joe Stern.
No.
Okay. All right, that was an emphatic no from Joe. So with that in mind, we're going to wrap this up. Guys, I hope you enjoyed this episode. Remember, you can get in touch with us and let us know what you would like to hear on future episodes of Forward Thinking. Our email address is fwthinking@discovery.com. Go to fwthinking.com for all of the blogs, podcasts, the video series, which just continues to get more awesome. I love working on this. It's fantastic. I really want you guys to be part of this conversation. So join in, let us know what you think, and we will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this topic and the future of technology, visit forwardthinking.com. Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places.